A few years ago, a very eager young man entered the novitiate for the Dominican order to study for the priesthood and to follow the religious life of the evangelical councils of poverty, chastity, and obedience in the order of preachers. He was a bright guy, as most people attracted to the family of St. Dominic are, and he set about learning absolutely everything that he could about Dominican history, spirituality, and the customs of the order. He wanted to get it all right, and so he scrupulously observed even the smallest details of the rules and the constitutions. He also was very quick to correct anything he observed to be a fault or imperfection in others. And he was as strict with himself as he was with everybody else around him. His knowledge of all of the arcane minutiae of Dominican religious life was quite impressive. But as he went on, he was also quite sure that all of his superiors, all of his brothers in the novitiate and in the priories and parishes he visited, they just weren't Dominican enough. And so he constantly complained about how lukewarm the observance of the rule was and how there needed to be a great reform of the order to make sure the friaries were authentically Dominican enough. And, of course, he was the one to make that happen. At some point, his novice master took a walk with him and complimented him on his vast knowledge and strict observance of the customs. And then the old priest stopped, looked at the young man, and said, "You are certainly a very good Dominican. But are you a Christian?" The novice didn't last long and left formation and eventually lost the faith. The thing is that none of that was surprising to anyone in the community. What a shame that the man had such a knowledge of the disciplines of the order. But he forgot, spectacularly, I might add, what it was all for: to become one with God. Yet there is a particularly tender wound that often unknowingly afflicts many people, both inside and outside of religious life, whereby they seek to earn the favor of God by going from the external forms of faith so it can reform the internal form within. And the stricter they become with themselves, they then become ruthless with everyone around them. And then their wound festers in an infection that becomes apparent to all but them, and their soul dies because of this one problem. They missed the forest for the trees and ended up dying in the wilderness because they couldn't find the light above the trees to guide them home. On this Sexagesima Sunday, the second Sunday before Lent, I cannot believe that Lent is almost already here. It's incredible, right? The gospel in the extraordinary form, taken from the 8th chapter of Luke's gospel, speaks of the dangers. The sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and it was trodden down, and the fowls of the air devoured it. And some other fell upon a rock, and as soon as it was sprung up, it withered away because it had no moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns growing up with it choked it. and other, some, fell upon good ground, and being sprung up, yielded fruit 100-fold. Jesus explains how the seed is the word of God, which is snatched away by the evil one, or how it's received with joy, but as soon as temptation comes, rootless people fall away. Or how it's strangled by the thorns of cares, riches, and pleasures and fails to yield fruit. But he also says, on the good ground are they who, in a good and perfect heart, hearing the word, keep it and bring forth fruit in patience. There are many earnest young converts and reverts nowadays who are looking for authentic religion. And they're finding it in our Catholic faith. Thanks be to God. But there is the possibility of a danger, though, if they risk mistaking the disciplines for ends rather than means. And that's always a shortcut to disaster. How many young people start out with joy in their faith, and the Word of God ends up just another dead letter among many in their lives? Is there any way to avoid this problem? Sometimes people think that you just have to make people enthusiastic all the time, and then that's going to carry them through all the way to heaven. In Isaiah chapter 58, the Lord gives specific instructions about what we are to do. Share your bread with the hungry. Shelter the oppressed and the homeless. Clothe the naked when you see them, and do not turn your back on your own. Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your wound shall quickly be healed. If you remove from your midst oppression, false accusation, and malicious speech, if you bestow your bread on the hungry and satisfy the afflicted, then light shall rise for you in the darkness, and the gloom shall become for you like midday. Yet we live in an age in which people spend more time on the internet. You know, this is my hobby horse, right? Yeah. Talking about dogma than believing it. Where they obsess over every jot and tittle of every rite and ceremony of liturgical worship and drone on and on about what has changed and why. And you know I'm a liturgy nerd. I love all this stuff, right? But they don't pray. Where they brandish their Christian identity around like a sharp-edged sword to vanquish virtual enemies in the name of Christ the King. When the Prince of Peace wants to beat those swords into plowshares so we can grow something that can actually nourish and sustain civilization and bring joy to the heart at a table of plenty. You know, I have sympathy for some inexperienced young people just trying to find their way who go down this path. I absolutely was one of them, right? And there's parts of me, even now, that confuse the soapbox of rhetoric for the depths of wisdom. But at a certain point, it's hard to be angry all the time and see nothing but doom and gloom all the blessed time. It gets predictable and boring and tedious. There's no life in it because there is no fruit, or the little there is snuffed out by the smoke of Satan, whose face looks a lot more like our own in the mirror than it does the ones that we want to label so much as evil. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus bluntly warns his followers, "You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its taste, with what can it be seasoned? It is no longer good for anything to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." Salt is one of those things that you have to use in exactly the right way, right? Too little and the food is bland, right? Too much and the food is just inedible. It's not the fault of the salt if your dish is bad. It comes down to user error. Now, salt can also lose its favor by three things: high humidity, moisture absorption, or chemical impurities. At least according to Wikipedia, because I do not do science. Okay. Science people, feel free to correct me all day long. That's fine. Okay. Likewise, when our religious life is too little, our spirit is just dead. And when it's too much, our bodies and minds can become overwhelmed and overextended. It's not the fault of doctrine or sacraments or devotions. They're all wonderful in and of themselves. But if we misuse and abuse them, our user error means that they can cease to transform and transfigure us. The high humidity of being constantly riled up all the time about everyone and everything raises the temperature far beyond what the little blossoms of your soul can take. The hothouse is not meant for delicate roses, and you are not the prickly cactus you think you are. Too much heat, not enough light. The moisture absorption of plunging headfirst into deep waters when we don't know how to swim and are too proud to ask for lessons. Those who have been studying their faith for about 5 minutes and think they know it all, and everybody else is a moron. Water is good, but you wrinkle up like a prune after too long in it, and if all you have is just water, then you eventually melt away into what was meant in proper measure to save you or at least keep you alive. And finally, the chemical impurities of adding to our religious lives the smallest drops of the poison of heresy, schism, and apostasy, which we allow in without realizing those drops have added up to replace the life-giving blood in our veins with death-dealing toxins, which make us toxic to ourselves and everyone around us. And the sick man begins to diagnose everyone around him with the poisons of heresy, schism, and apostasy, when the wise man says to him, "Physician, heal thyself." The only antidote to that poison is humility, obedience, and trust. Because salt doesn't regain its savor when it goes bad, I'm afraid. But the Christian soul, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Take the antidote of humility, obedience, and trust, and you will see the salt within regain its flavor and what it invisibly seasons, because it doesn't need to be showy or ostentatious. Will grow and bear fruit that will last. So again, I ask you, are you like that Dominican novice who ended up a failed religious because you've lost your flavor? Are you still drinking the poison that's killing you without even realizing it? My friends, stay salty.